Yeah. Thanks, Dennis. Go ahead, Tammy. Do you have thoughts?
That's a good question. I wish nothing but health to everyone. And really far to the left, I just don't really quite buy that. From the not extensive research I did on Kamala, there was definitely seemed to be a career politician, I'll say that much. There was an eye on the prize, and I'll say it wasn't by accident that she got to this position, definitely not from, like, especially looking at her background. What about you, Althea, with the last 30 seconds we have?
Yeah, I mean, I think she was chosen for a reason, and they knew they were going to get the accusation that they were Trojan horsing a progressive into the White House, especially with Joe Biden being at his advanced age. I think they picked her because she is confident, capable, appeals to more people who are maybe not as excited by Joe Biden, and that she aligns with him politically if, you know, we ended up in the case where she needed to take over. That's my final thought. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you, everyone, for calling into The Gap. Thank you, Tammy. Thank you, Sonia.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and we'll see you next week.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
It is indeed KBOO Portland. It's third Friday. It's 9 a.m. It's time for the Veterans Voice with your host, Marvin. Stay tuned.
I was raised here in this living hell. All right, Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, 104.3 FM in Corvallis, 91.9 FM in Hood River, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. And you can hear our earlier shows on KBOO.FM, / Veterans Voice. I'm Marvin with Sonia engineering the show, and I really appreciate Sonia. I've known her for a long, long time, and she's really a great person. If you ever get a chance to meet Sonia, you'll understand what I'm saying about how great of a person she is. And I thought that song was very appropriate for what's going on in our city and around this country, that we have to take it to the streets, because if we don't, nothing's going to change. It's going to be the same thing over and over and over. And so taking it to the streets is our way of saying, this isn't working. We want to change in this country. And so our brothers and sisters out on the streets here in Portland, doing what's important to let the feds and the state know that things have got to change. And they're doing it. I've been down there quite a bit and see how that the feds and the police are, you know, reacting to the citizens' right to protest and the right to speak out about what we don't think is correct and the way they're being treated. I've been gassed a few times and I don't like it. I'm going to talk a little bit about some things that are going on and but, you know, with everything going on that it is now, this station's been on the air for over 50 years now, and it's a very important part of our city and for the progressive movement in this city and to all the people around the world who listens to our show, to not just this show, but to our radio station. And it's the only way we can stay on the air is from us, you know, from donations for us. And so if you haven't been a member or you want to become a member, or if you want to become a member, or if you're already a member but want to give some more help to our station, you know, you can go on KBOO.FM, and up on the right-hand corner, I believe, you can hit donations, or you can send a check to KBOO. And I don't have that address with me, but you can find it, and you can help support our radio station. And as things keep going crazy like they are, our station's going to get more and more important. And we need to be on the air. So what I believe, and I hope you believe it too. But, you know, this federal and the state police and the local police have no respect for people, you know, the veterans and the mothers that have been down on the front lines of what's going on here. My friend Mike, they attacked two veterans, but they've attacked more than two. But the two that really people saw were my friend Mike and another Navy veteran. A Navy veteran, I think he was a graduate of the Naval Academy at Annapolis, where he walked up and wanted to talk to him and you know, tell him what he believed and why they were doing what they were doing, that they were attacking citizens of this country. Having served in the military, you know, he wanted to tell them that they're really not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And what did they do? They beat him in the legs and in the hands with their batons. And then they sprayed him in the face with pepper spray, which is very, very painful. Painful. And then a few nights later, or maybe a little longer, that my friend Mike, who I've known for 30 years, he's a Vietnam vet, and him and two other guys went back to Vietnam in 1994 together. And I've known Mike for, like I say, almost 30 years, and he's a good person. He's very dedicated and very, very, he's just a nice guy. And Mike did the same thing. I knew he shouldn't have done it, but I knew what was going to happen, but I couldn't get to him fast enough. And he went right up to him, too, and he was telling him what, you know, the same belief systems that the Navy guy had. And what they do, the only thing different, they didn't beat him with their batons, but they sprayed him right in the face with pepper spray. And it just, you know, just Mike, you know, it just getting sprayed with pepper spray is a horrible thing. And here these federal agents were spraying him in the face. And I think about a week later, he was back down doing the same thing, but he was taking pictures and everything. This time he takes a lot of pictures. He really, you know, cameras. He likes cameras, and he writes stories and things. And this time he was there, and he turned his back to the feds to look back at the crowd, and they charged. They hit him in the back with and knocked him over. Mike's 75 years old. They knocked him over, and his, let me see, his right eye is just black. They blackened his right eye, and they just went right across him after the crowd. They have no respect. No respect. And then our sisters, mothers, in the line in front of the feds, again, here they are, telling these feds what they're doing is wrong. What they're doing is wrong. And they most of them were wearing yellow t-shirts, if I'm pretty sure. And here they were locked armed, and here comes the feds spraying them with tear gas and pepper spray and going, pushing them back and going right through them. You know, these people have mothers, sisters. How would they like that to happen to their family when these women are out there doing what is right? What is right? You know, our African American brothers and sisters have been abused in this country by the government and other groups like the KKK and the Nazis, American Nazis, for a long time. And what we're doing out there is we want our rights for our sisters and our brothers. We want the government to do what they're supposed to do. And that's not to attack the citizens of this country. And that's exactly what they're doing. And then they came out and said that the feds were leaving the city. And but that's not true, because I was down there, and they're going through down at the Marco Hatfield building. Marco Hatfield was a peace activist, you know? A U.S. senator. He was an Oregon governor. He was a World War II veteran. You know, he was one of the first ones to go into Hiroshima after the bombing. And he was anti-nuclear. You know, he was one of us on a lot of things, on the peace issues. And they were still going in and out of that back door. They'd honk their horns and they'd open the big door and they'd drive in. So they were still here. They weren't gone. And then again, they came back out up at the ICE building when people were up there protesting. And here they are again. You know what they do? Fly in that day. They were still here. They didn't go anywhere. So that's just a few things I wanted to get off my mind right now. But, you know, I have so much respect for the people who are standing up for rights of people. I really have a lot of respect for those people. You know, I'll support them any way that I can. After last month's show, I got some calls and some emails from people who wanted to know what the book that I had read when I was a freshman in high school that was written by James Baldwin, the great African-American writer, and it was The Fire Next Time, and it was written in 1963. And James Baldwin, you know, his books really changed my outlook and my thinking about the racial problems in this country, and I was never the same after reading his book. has a lot of other, he has other books. No Name in the Street in 1972, The Devil Finds Work in 76, and also Remember This House, which was made into a documentary, which won an Academy Award. And another novel he had, If Beale Street, I think I already said it, If Beale Street Could Talk, which is really a great, great book too. So if, that's What They Were, my friends. If you want to read those books by James Baldwin, it's going to really, really open a lot of people's eyes about the racial problems that this country has and had back then and is still having to this day. James Baldwin died in, I think, 1987 at the age of 63. He left America and he moved to France. But that those books are really, really important and really great to read, and it'll help you a lot, you know, to for folks. Well, you folks who listen to this radio station, and we know what racial troubles are in this country. You know, I've always said it, that the number one problem in this country is racism, and I still believe it. And so other people who've never heard of James Baldwin that should read this book. It's really wonderful. And I want to get back to some of the stuff I want to talk about. You know, you guys, folks, sorry, you folks know about what was going on downtown, where the feds were driving these vans around and they would grab citizen protesters right off of the street without telling who they were, what, you know, what organization they were from, and taking them and taking them to it was some federal building and interrogating them and letting them loose. But in this country, someone drives up without, you know, because these militia groups wear the same kind of uniforms and crap that these cops wear, so you don't know who's doing that to you, and you know, if you can fight back, you're going to fight back, and then they're going to charge you with resisting arrest and all this when you didn't know who was grabbing you off of the street. That sounds like a South Central and South American squad doing it, you know. Portland protesters allege that the federal law enforcement officials are driving through the streets of Portland, Oregon, in unmarked cars and interrogating them as part of an effort to quell their First Amendment rights. And this was came from Rolling Stone magazine. And it's, when was it? July 17th, 2020. And they talk about, you know, one of the people, his name was Connor O'Shea, was demonstrating outside the Multnomah County Justice Center in downtown Portland when a group of men in camouflage jumped out of a unmarked van and chased after them. While O'Shea managed to hide, another person, Pettibone, was taken by the men to the federal courthouse and put inside a cell. He was interrogated for 90 minutes before he was released. You know, that sounds, like I said, it sounds like I just happened to be wearing black on a sidewalk in downtown Portland at the time. And that apparently is grounds for detaining me. It's not against the law to wear whatever you want. And they didn't ever tell him why he was taken, and they never did, they didn't arrest him, or they didn't, you know, they just detained him and then interrogated him. And one of the things that I've learned a long time ago, when the cops ask you something, you know, it's like Sergeant Short Schultz from the old Hogan's Heroes show, "I see nothing, I know nothing." That's the best thing to do. For the past month and a half, activists in Portland have appeared outside the courthouse to protest against police brutality and institutional racism in response to the brutal killing of George Floyd. Portland has long been a site of activism and peaceful protest, a reputation that contrasts sharply with the local police force's excessive use of force, according to the Rolling Stone magazine. You know, Portland has been for a long time a center of activism. In after World War One, the bonus marchers who were going back to Washington D.C. to get their bonuses, they were guaranteed bonuses for going to World War One because they were losing their spot in the economic system of this country, and so they wanted the United States was going into a depression, and these folks wanted their bonuses, and so they started right here in Portland, organized in Portland, and they headed back to D.C. and they were joined on the way back with not only other veterans but also their families and other supporters. When they got to D.C., they made their camps and stuff and went to talk to the government, and of course the government wouldn't talk to them, and the government attacked them. I think one person was killed, but they used horses. They went right through the camps with their horses. They just went after them and drove them out of town. So you go fight for this country, and how do? They treat you like dirt when you come back, when you want what was guaranteed to you. So, you know, free speech is only free to people who, support and believe in what they're saying. The Constitution is working for those people, you know, not for everybody else. So something happened that really caught my attention. I think it was in the Oregonian, where I read just a little snippet was there, and they didn't mention it very much after that, which was that the federal government were listening and getting phone numbers of people that were down at the protests. They were listening to citizens, and I read further on where that the government said that Portland was a no-fly zone. Was a no-fly zone, but there were airplanes in the skies, and so we, you know, just to add two and two up, you know, we know who they were. They were the federal government. They were listening in on phone calls that the people were making down at the protests, and they were denying it, and then finally they had to admit it, that they had these planes out. And they, and one thing that I read, that they said that they were U.S. Marshals planes, but that's not true either, because The Intercept wrote some articles about what was going on with these airplanes. The National Security Agency, NSA, back in Washington, listens to everything in the world. I'll bet there's not a mile in this whole world that they don't listen to. They listen to everything. Everything. So the military works with the National Security Agency. There's just no doubt about it. That's been proven. And even today, Intelligence and Security Command of the Army, that's their job. You know, I believe, I maybe somebody knows out there and can give Sonia a call at 503-231-8187 and tell her if it is against the law. You know, Snowden told us about this, but if you know if it's against the law, you know, give Sonia a call and let me know. In this article, I've got quite a few articles here. One is Air Force Special Operation surveillance plane is lurking near Portland during federal crackdown. I have another one. Are Homeland Security planes compiling a list of terrorists in Portland protests? And I think I have another one. Oh, yeah, here's the U.S. Marshals Service says it flew a small plane over Portland protest to photograph crowds below. And I guess, you know, we're not citizens. We're not citizens, you know. We're terrorists. Even though we're doing our right, we have a right to freedom of speech, and that's what we're doing. But they, you know, they categorize us as terrorists, not as citizens, my friends, not as citizens, but as terrorists, because we are trying to support our African American brothers and sisters, Native Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, who do not get to share in this country, who do not get a fair share of the pie. And that's what we're against. We want everybody to have the right that everybody else has. And the federal government is trying to stop that, trying to stop our voices. And I'm going to start to read this before I go into a little break. Air Force surveillance planes designed to carry state-of-the-art sensor typically reserved for war zones has been circling above Portland. While anonymous federal agents have thrown protesters into unmarked vans and fired tear gas at the Portland mayor in recent days, an Air Force surveillance plane designed to carry state-of-the-art sensors typically reserved for war zones has circled the Oregon City outskirts from above. The plane, a DO-328 Cougar, was spotted via the open source flight tracking website ADS-B Exchange, allowing the public to monitor its course. The intercept reviewed this flight data, confirming tight circular flights consistent with surveillance operations in and around Portland. The aircraft is a twin-engine plane built in a modular fashion that allows it to be outfitted with long-range surveillance equipment suitable for supporting U.S. Special Operations Commandos on the ground, according to Air Force documents and previous public reporting. It was in Colorado earlier this month, looping over Denver and Boulder before flying to Portland on July 19th, and has been circling above Portland and its suburbs since July 21st, according to the publicly available flight data aggregated by websites like ADS-B Exchange. At a Special Operations Force industry conference in 2015, as first reported by the defense blog War is Boring, Air Force Colonel Eric Forsyth detailed the Cougar's capabilities for conducting intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, showing off the equipment's potential to aid U.S. troops from above. But they've been doing that for a long time. Even in Vietnam, they had the Army Security Agency had planes that was doing the same thing, that were flying, trying to get positions, locations of the transmitters of the North Vietnamese troops in the South and the National Liberation Front, the Viet Cong troops in the South. They were trying to, you know, locate those so they could deal with them. The aircraft is a twin engine built in a modular fashion that allows it to be outfitted with long range surveillance equipment suitable for supporting Special Forces troops. It was in Colorado earlier this month. I'm reading the same thing over. I'm sorry. Showing off the equipment's potential to aid U.S. troops from above. With jacks for power, Ethernet, GPS, and other linkages, engineers can easily install all sorts of gear, wrote War is Boring, Joseph, if I can't pronounce his last name, at the time. These systems would potentially be able to run long-range radar, powerful cameras, high-powered radio, laser range finders, and more. I'm going to be turning the page. I think before I start again, Sonia, I would like you to go ahead and play that next song for me, The Crusade. If you could do that for me, please.
Coming right up.
Okay, thank you, Sonia. We're not supposed to have dead space, but we are. I think she's having trouble finding the song, but we'll get back. We'll get to it in just a minute, and we'll be able to hear it. I'm looking at the inside of this plane.
Politicians lead
us, okay, here we go.
Kill our children to settle a score, and we just follow. Believe what they say, but history tells us didn't have to be that way. Three skyscrapers fall out of the sky, but only two planes, and no one asks why. 10.2 seconds was all that it took. Newton laws being defied, boys. So at least take a look. Unpatriotic conspiracy rant. Get behind our boys, we'll be their chant. To defend our country is what we pay them for. Not your place in history. Leading us to war. As a leader, you hold your head high, but by your actions, thousands still die. A man of God, I so hope you pray for all of the suffering that you bring each day. 12% civilian casualties, common and war. For me, an unacceptable score. But in Iraq, it was 90%. Justify that, or let us hear you repent. Capitalists make money from strife, and ordinary people pay with their life. In the name of freedom is how they persuade. But history will show this, it's just another crusade. Politicians lead us to war, kill our children to settle a score. And we just follow, believe what they say. But history tells us, didn't have to be that way. But history tells us, didn't have to be that way.
The video I was just playing that audio from ends with a text on the screen that says, "May God forgive you because I can't."
Wow. Okay. Thank you, Sonia. So I'm going to get back to reading about us being spied on. That song I thought was, you know, we can't forget what happened in Afghanistan and Iraq and Syria, where so many innocent civilians were killed. So many innocent civilians were killed when they, you know, George W. Bush pulled troops out of Afghanistan and sent them to Iraq, and the bloodbath that went through that country after the American troops landed was just horrendous. You know, the killing of these civilians, of these children and women and the older folks was just too much. You know, the American people really didn't see what was going on. They didn't show these pictures of the horrors of the war, the bloodbaths that these people were being just slaughtered by American bombs and rockets and tanks and artillery. You know, I saw a picture of all these little children laying in line, you know, that had been killed by a bomb that was dropped from a plane, and just a slaughter. We can't forget that. We have to remember that and keep it in our minds when this government decides that they're going to go to war and they're going to send the military, our military, into these places. You know, this boy child in the People's House in Washington, sitting in the Oval Office, has no idea what war's like. You know, he had 5 deferments to go to war, and 4 of them was for school, but the last one was just completely a farce. You know, it's a minimal medical deferment. He said he had bone spurs on his heels, which, you know, doctors just snipped those off. He could have enlisted. He could have went to the war and joined us guys and women on the in Vietnam, but he didn't, you know. And now he's sending troops all around the world to kill and possibly be killed. You know, he's just a horrible person, and I have no respect for him at all. Just none. I'm going to get back to the story by The Intercept about the surveillance plane, because I got some more, and I only have an hour, and that's hardly enough time. The Cougar that has been orbiting Portland is registered to the 645th Aeronautical Engineering Group at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, quite a distance from Portland. The 645th previously operated under the code name Big Safari and was founded in 1952 to centralize the Air Force covert surveillance program during the Cold War. Big Safari has been an alternative acquisition source for certain high-priority rapid reaction under combat commander needs, former Air Force Secretary Donnelly said in 2010. In 2018, Orbit for former Big Safari director Bill Grimes described the entity as a secretive Air Force acquisition program for specialized special mission aircraft. While the Cougar impressive potential for wide area wartime surveillance is clear, it is less obvious why a warplane is flying tight circles, typically a dead giveaway for aerial surveillance near domestic protests or on whose orders and on whose orders. Last month, the motherboard reported similar surveillance flyovers by the National Guard over the protesters. It's unclear whether the Air Force is engaging in active surveillance of the protesters are merely testing the plane's capabilities to do so, or doing something entirely unrelated, which we know since they came out and said they're listening to phones. The Air Force did not respond to The Intercept's request for comment. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat, Oregon, a Portland resident who was made aware of the flights by The Intercept, inquires to his office, made his own request to the Air Force for information. In response to Wyden, made after this story was initially published, the Air Force denied the flights were surveilling protesters. Why would they fly that thing all the way from Ohio out to Portland, Oregon, just as protests were going on? You know, that costs a lot of money to fly those planes, plus all that really expensive instruments on that plane. Plus, you have to pay the people doing it. You know, even though military folks don't make a lot of money, that still adds up. The Air Force did not respond to the intercept's request for comment. This week, the Air Force conducted previously planned test flights in the Northwest United States that required the environmental conditions typical of the region. This location was chosen several months ago due to the high likelihood of cloud cover desired for the equipment test. Boy, they can lie right to your face, can't they? Lie right to your face. Wyden told the Intercept the Air Force response raised its own questions. The Air Force should know better than to fly circles over American cities when armed federal troops are beating and gassing protesters below. Even if this was a test flight arranged months ago, the Air Force decision to continue as planned rather than delaying the flight raises a serious question about the judgment of the military leaders approved the flight. Yeah. Other members of Congress were skeptical of the Air Force's explanation. Too much coincidence to be credible, tweeted Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat, Connecticut, who suggested there should be inspector general and congressional investigations. Big Spar is all about testing new equipment, so maybe we are seeing the next generation of spy technology being used domestically right now, or they are taking advantage of the situation to improve testing. So Portland was being spied on, testing this equipment so they can use it against other citizens in this country. Their mere presence near Portland of the plane designed to stress test aerial spy gear is enough to concern some observers. The apparent use of military aircraft in a domestic operation should set off all kinds of alarms, says Stephen Aftergood, a director of the Federation of American Scientists Government Secrecy Policy. What is their mission? Under what authority are they operating, and who authorized them? It seems like the administration is pushing right through what has been established norms of transparency and accountability. The vast array of pirate surveillance gear this plane potentially could be carrying on these flights is cause for concern over privacy and political expressionism. This aircraft is believed to carry signal intelligence sensors. If that is the case, then circling at that distance would probably depend on the altitude, allow the sensors to collect data. A retired Italian Air Force officer said aerospace told the Intercept, though he noted that he could only speculate without knowing the Cougar's actual payload. And this was an update on July 25th, 2020. This article has been updated to include responses made after publication of the Air Force to the Office of Senator Wyden's reaction and reaction from Senator Richard Blumenthal. Information about the Air Force plane left the Portland area. So they weren't giving out any information about the plane while it was here doing its dirty work, listening to Americans' private talks on their telephones. It's probably listening to other things too, you know, with all that equipment they have. They have the ability to take pictures, so that's one thing that's kind of, you know, it's also very scary about this. If they're taking pictures from that high, you know, these feds, they had people in the crowds too, you know. They had people out in there watching and calling back into their operations inside that Marco Hatfield building. There's just no doubt about it. In fact, I think they admitted it. But the thing, and another thing, I got from Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is very interesting. They talk about these vans, intercept vans. Okay, let me read this thing. I don't have a lot of time, but I'm going to read it. As uprisings over police brutality and institutional racism have swept over the country, many people are facing the full might of law enforcement weaponry and surveillance for the first time. Whenever protesters, cell phones, and police are in the same place, protesters should worry about their cell phone surveillance. Often security practitioners and other protesters respond to that worry about advice, almost the use of cell site simulators, also known as CSS, or IMSI, Catcher, Stingray, Dirtbox, Hailstorm, fake base stations, or crossbow, by local law enforcement. But often this advice is misguided or rooted in a fundamental lack of understanding of what a cell site simulator is and what it does and how it is used. The bottom line is there is very little concrete evidence of cell site simulators being used against protesters in the United States so far. The threat of cell site simulators should not stop activists from voicing their dissent or using their phones. On the other hand, given that more than 85 local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies around the country have some type of CSS, it is not unreasonable to conclude cell site simulators in your security plan if you are going to a protest and take some single step to protect yourself. The CSS is a device that mimics a legitimate cellular tower. Police around the world use this technology primarily to locate a phone and therefore a person with a high degree of accuracy to determine who is at the specific location. There have been reports in the past that advanced CSS can intercept and record content and metadata on phone calls and text messages using 2G networks. There are no publicly known ways to listen to text message or call signs on 4G so far. Cell site stimulators can also disrupt cellular service in a specific area. However, it is very hard to confirm this, that the government is using this. Battery drains, service interruptions, or workplace downgrades can happen for other reasons. And they go on to talk about police using CSS to intercept content is legally unlikely as well, because in general, the state and federal wiretap laws prohibit intercepting communications without warrant. And we know that's not true because they do it all the time. They do it all the time. And one of the things that are really interesting, how to protect yourself from a cell site simulator. As noted in our surveillance self-defense guide for protesters, the best way to protect yourself from cell site simulators is to put your phone in airplane mode and disable the GPS, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, as well as cellular data. While GPS is received only and does not leak any location information on its own, many apps track GPS locations and end up in a database law enforcement can search later. Okay. How a cell site simulator might be detected. Unfortunately, cell site simulators are very difficult to detect. Some of the signs one might intercept as evidence, such as downgrading to 2G or losing your connection to the cell tower, are also common signs of overload. One potential way to direct cell site simulator to detect is to use software-defined radio to map all the cellular antennas in your area and then look for antennas that show up and then disappear. move around, show up in two or more places, or are especially that are these are especially powerful. These are several projects that attempt to do this, such as Seaglass, Stitch, EFF, Crocodile Hunter for 4G. So there's ways to get around them, but they're listening to what you're saying. They're trying to get information about what groups are doing, where they're moving, what is their next, you know, their next project. And we have to be on our toes, because these guys have lots of money that they can be using to follow us around. Okay, here's one from the Willamette Week. It's by Marty Smith. Come, come. You can't just say Department of Homeland Security biplane. Expect me to know what you're talking about. Do you mean the Cessna caravan that circled downtown Portland for 3 hours on July 13th, or one of the two Beechcraft Super King Air 350s that did the same on July 22nd, 28th, and 29th? Let me turn the page here. In any case, as reported in Willamette Week on August 5th, the flight patterns of at least the first three planes above are consistent with electronic surveillance technology called dirt boxing. A dirt box is a high-tech wireless transmitter sometimes mounted in a small plane that pretends to be a cell phone tower. When your phone and every other phone in the vicinity tries to connect to these fake towers, the box collects its electronic serial number, its approximate location, and the time and duration of the call it makes. It can do this even if you're using a cell phone private app like Signal that encrypts your calls and texts. If you're not, it may get those as well. Sure, the authorities might need a subpoena to connect to raw cell data to a name and address, but the police can do that anytime they want. But it doesn't matter, says an ESN harvested at a Portland protest on June 29, turns up at the protest in Chicago. That's suspicious enough for that subpoena, no problem. Nice try, Osama. What they're saying is that they intercepted this phone calls down here in Portland, and then whoever had that phone went to Chicago, which isn't against the law. I mean, you know, we can still travel in this country without having to tell anybody where we're going. Or if they're in a hurry, they can just use a proximity tracking function on a second dirt bag in an unmarked van, say, to hunt your terrorist down in person. Like I was saying earlier, they have these vans, and sometimes these vans will be listening just like the airplanes do, but they're sending the information from the van up to these airplanes also, where the airplanes have a lot stronger capabilities to track these phone calls. And them saying that they're saying that they can intercept this and all of this, they're also getting the name of the person who owns the phone. When they get the information on the person who owns the phone, they're also getting, you know, their address and different address and personal information out of it. And they can go back and listen to or read any of the texts or phone calls that were made from this phone. So your phones are not secure, no matter what you think they are. You have to be really careful. Okay, the whole thing is extremely creepy, and it's probably only the staggering incompetence of the Trump administration that keeps it from being even worse. In the meantime, protesters might consider picking up a cheap burner or even leaving the phone at home. I don't take my phone with me when I go down there. I leave it in my car, you know, far away from where I am. And I feel a lot safer when I'm, you know, when I'm down there doing that. So if you're going down there, you can leave your phone, you know, either at home or in your vehicle, or you know, wherever you feel that it's safe to have it. But here's another one by Willamette Week. U.S. Marshals Service says it flew a small plane over Portland protests to photograph crowds below. United States Marshals Service confirmed Wednesday that it flew a small aircraft over Portland protests for an hour and a half on the evening of June 13th, and that it photographed crowds surrounding the Multnomah County Justice Center and the Mark O. Hatfield Federal Courthouse. Back in June, Willamette Week reported first that a plane linked previously to the U.S. Marshals Service circled over Portland protests. At the time, the agency declined to disclose if the aircraft belonged to them or to say what type of surveillance was being conducted. On June 13, 2020, the U.S. Marshals Service management approved deployment of an air asset to assist the ongoing law enforcement challenges on the ground. That means us, challenges on the ground. The aircraft, a single-engine Cessna Caravan, is owned and operated by the United States Marshals Services. The agency wrote in the August 19th letter signed by spokesman William Delaney. The aircraft is equipped with an imaging system, an infrared system, aviation, electro-optical, and infrared cameras that give better situational awareness to the small number of deputies who are defending the federal courthouse during the time of great uncertainty. If you were down on the ground in front of one of those, when those feds came out of there swinging their batons, throwing flashbangs, pouring tear gas all over the crowd, it seemed like a whole bunch of them. Uncertainty. During the times of great uncertainty, where we just want our rights, we want our rights for our brothers and sisters. So they're just saying great uncertainty. Delaney said the plane was not equipped with cell site simulators, which we just talked about, or similar surveillance system, which can interfere with cell phone signals for those in the aircraft scope. So I don't know if I believe that or not, because if that little plane has that capacity, then why does that big one, Air Force One, have the capacity? You know, it can block cell phones. It can do all of that stuff. So if they're trying to pinpoint somebody, or they think they've pinpointed somebody who is using his phone to direct stuff, that all they have to do is put that scope over where that phone is, and they can shut that phone down. Maybe that person isn't even, you know, doing anything. Plane was also equipped with a camera which captures still images of crowds to assist in legitimate law enforcement functions. So just being downtown at a protest makes us legitimate targets. I know people who go down there that are going down there to support our sisters and brothers in the African American communities, you know, the Native American communities, the Hispanic community, and the Asian American communities, that are going down to support these our brothers and sisters, and they're calling us legitimate targets. Who's the enemy here? You know. However, Delaney wrote, individuals photographed are not identifiable, and instead appear to be indistinct heat signatures with no physical characteristic, biographic identifier, or personal identifiable information of any kind. The Marshals Service says it did not share the image with any other agency. And you know that's not true. These folks share everything with each other. And if a satellite and this other spy plane can have such clear pictures of people, then you know that this plane could do the same thing. they could do the same thing. They're, you know, they're lying to our faces. They're lying to our faces. Well, I'm out of time. I'm really sorry I'm out of time. I have a lot more here I wanted to say, but I just want to say that, you know, please keep up the pressure on the federal government, because we have a right to be down there. They don't have a right to be taking pictures of us and listening to our phone calls. We'll be back on September 18th at 9 a.m. And there it is. Thank you, Sonia.
Oh, I marched to the Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British wars. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. For I killed my share of engines in 1,000 different fights. I was there at the Little Big Horn. I heard many men lying, I saw many more a dying.